Welcome to the Graston Technique Forum, a monthly podcast on instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. Today's discussion is moderated by Mike Plosky, PT, ATC, and Graston Technique Director of Strategic Planning. This is the first installment of a two-part series.
Welcome, everyone. Today's podcast highlights Graston Technique in the treatment of golf injuries. My guests are Nathan Sells, a GT provider since 2011, and Barton Bishop, a GT provider since 2008. Nathan Sells is a regional manager for Athletico Physical Therapy and a facility manager for their clinic in Bettendorf, Iowa. He graduated from the University of Iowa in 2005 with a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree. He is a former NCAA collegiate golfer and a certified medical professional from the Titleist Performance Institute. He also is a golf fitness instructor and certified golf physical therapist and a former manager of Athletico's Golf Performance Center. Barton Bishop is the Chief Clinical Officer for Sport and Spine Rehab, a practice with 7 clinics in the Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. He graduated from Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska in 2003 with a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree. His undergraduate work was also at Creighton, where he played Division I collegiate golf, and he has further studied the biomechanics of the golf swing and sports physical therapy. He, too, is a certified medical professional from the Titleist Performance Institute and is also a board-certified specialist in sports physical therapy by the American Board of Physical Therapy Specialties. Welcome, Nathan and Barton.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
Yeah, great times.
So I'd like to start by asking, Nathan, first you, how were you first exposed to Graston Technique?
I was first exposed to Graston when I was in the western suburbs of Chicago. It was something that I heard a number of the orthopedic surgeons actually discussing out. I had been exposed to it on the periphery, knew of it, and had the opportunity to try to expand my treatment of athletes into a kind of a niche market, something different than was classically being done by myself, and had the opportunity to attend a CEU. And at first thought it would just be an aggressive form of manual therapy, and then learned on the benefits it has just from acute to chronic, aggressive to light pressure. And so it ended up being much different than my preconceived notions of Graston before I got into it.
And Barton, how about yourself? How were you first exposed to Graston Technique?
Well, we had a genius physical therapist that kind of exposed our company to a bunch of new things. And one of them was Graston. This was probably back in 2007 or 2008. And he you know, brought back these metal instruments, was taught by Tom Hyde, and just brought back these metal instruments and just was having amazing results with his patients. And I said, I have to do this. So my position in the company allowed me to get everyone trained on it. So we had had a course at our clinic and got our entire company trained in the Graston Technique and just have never looked back since then.
So can you share a little bit about how you've integrated that into your daily practice?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I like to do is to take the instruments and use them in functional and sport-specific activities, since we're talking about athletes and golfers, and yes, golfers are athletes. Okay, that's the basis. If we don't go from there, then you got to stop listening to the podcast if you don't think golfers are athletes. I mean, you know, golf is an Olympic sport. Baseball is not, right, Nathan?
It is.
But anyway, so, you know, since we're talking about that, I like to use it in really a functional and sport-specific manner. So when I see restriction, if we're talking about a golfer that is just unable to get enough thoracic rotation or unable to get their latissimus to have enough extensibility to get their arms to the top of the swing on the backswing, I treat there. So I treat them in their restricted area, and I treat them while they're moving and while they're doing rehab. And I just find that it's so much more fun for the patient, athlete and non-athlete alike. It's so much more applicable. They feel it's so much more personalized, and it's definitely more effective than any other style of treatment that I do because it's so functional.
Nathan, how about yourself? How have you integrated Graston Technique in your daily practice?
One of the first ways I've integrated Graston is using it as an assessment tool and not just a treatment tool. So I feel like depending on the way you hold the tool and the lighter pressure and starting to go over that gives me an idea of some of the tissue restriction and the pliability of the tissue before I go into other treatments or as I'm just trying to figure out what's going on with that individual, which was different than I anticipated. So I use it as an assessment tool, and then I use it as a tool during the recovery process where you can go from different varying amounts of, like in GT1, in the first Graston technique, you're really learning the strokes, you're learning how to assess with it, you're learning some of the basic treatment ideas. It wasn't until I took the second class where you really learn a lot of that functional stuff that Barton was talking about. And that's really where I've started to integrate it now, where all of my patients, the athletes and the non-athletes, are able to come in and benefit from some form of treatment, and I'm able to incorporate it into every patient I see, and it can cut down my manual treatment time where I feel like with the Graston techniques, I can accomplish in 5 minutes what it might have taken me 15 minutes with just my hands.
So what are the most common injuries that you see with golfers?
For myself, I think the most common one, especially in the amateur golfer, is just low back pain. And unfortunately, low back pain could have a number of causes from everything he's talking about, lack of thoracic rotation, lack of hip internal rotation, lack of hip external rotation, you know, lack of pelvic control, tight lats, to tight calves, and they can't stay in a flexed position through the swing. And sometimes it's just bad mechanics of the golf swing. And so low back pain is by far the largest one I see in my practice. And really the fun part of our job and my job is figuring out exactly what it is that's causing their low back pain. And so it becomes that puzzle to figure out because it's not just a simple cookbook recipe to get every single person better because each person that approaches has a different set of characteristics that's causing the low back pain in their game.
Barton, how about yourself?
I think that's the interesting thing in there is you notice he listed all the potential causes of lower back pain, and none of them, he didn't mention core weakness, right, or core instability. And I think that's a huge thing when we're talking about golfers and non-golfers. The concept of needing to do core stability exercises for lower back pain is much less likely to be your first cause than something else. If you know anything about SFMA and selective functional movement assessment, of which the Tiles Performance Institute bases their assessment, their movement assessment, that is, you never bring a mobility problem to a stability issue, meaning when patients don't have mobility, either in their joints or in their soft tissues, you have to resolve that first. So getting into someone with lower back pain and looking at their tissue extensibility, their soft tissue extensibility, their joint mobility dysfunctions, fixing that and using an instrument on that is super effective. The other one that I see is tennis elbow. And tennis elbow is much more common in golfers than it is in tennis players. If we're talking about lead elbow, which on a right-handed golfer would be their left elbow, there's often swing mechanical problems that can lead to that, and head of the elbow that would lead to having that problem. But the instruments fit really well around the elbow in order to treat it. I depending on the size of the person, I think I can never remember the name, but GT6 is the small one with the hook, right? That fits well on a smaller person. On a larger person, there's the one that I think I used to call like the bottle opener, but I can't remember.
Yeah, that would be GT2, right?
Yeah, GT2, exactly. Fits really well around the lateral extensor muscle mass of the elbow. But both of those things are absolutely, by far and away, the most common thing that we see in golfers.
Do you see different injuries in professional golfers versus amateurs?
Yeah, actually, I just wrote up a chapter for a golf home study course for the sports physical therapy section of the APTA, and there's a major difference between professionals and amateurs, and it deals with a little bit of overuse for professionals. There isn't a lot of research to support it, but there's a little bit of it, but also really dealing with the hips. And the professional golfer is going to have much stronger gluteals and much more hip internal rotation and generalized hip mobility, which is going to help them create more power. But it also will cause a little bit more of an ability to protect against lower back pain in that. Amateur golfers are going to have the low back pain because of their mobility problems and also their stability problems. And then the elbow pain is a little bit less likely. It can come from more of an acute trauma from taking a huge divot, whereas in the professional golfer, it comes from the repetitive motion of hitting thousands of golf balls.
Nathan, how about yourself? Do you see different injuries based on the level of skill or the level of play of the golfer?
I do, and when I'm treating a golfer, one of the first things I point out, whether it be performance or the injury, prevention of injury, the rehabilitation, I say there's three reasons the golf swing falls apart. One is that you don't know what you're supposed to do. The second one is somebody's taught you, a golf professional has taught you, but you don't have the athleticism to perform that motion. Or the third one is your body lacks the mobility, the stability, the strength, the flexibility to do it. And really when I'm talking about the professional golfer, the first one and the second one I almost throw out, and so I'm really looking at just a physical exam. When you're talking about the amateur golfer, sometimes it's they can have what appears to be a more normal exam where they would have the mobility, the stability, the strength, the flexibility, and it's quite possible that they have a swing fault that's leading to it. Something similar to like early extension into the downswing before impact puts the lumbar spine into a closed pack position. Now you're trying to rotate on an extended spine, and the shear forces, the bad forces to the lumbar spine go through the roof, and it might be something that I struggle to treat in the clinic because I don't pretend to be the golf pro, even with a golfing background. I don't want to do someone else's role as well as be doing something that I'm not the most suitable or most certified to do. And so when I look at the amateur golfer, I think there is a lot of that bad mechanics, traumatic, you know, where they wear down differently, where the professional golfer, I'm really looking at, you know, with the amount of repetition, the overuse type things. And as Barton said, some of the research, it's always good to have the research. Unfortunately, we don't always have research to back up what we're looking for. So, you know, I look for the overuse with them. I look for the physical causes, and sometimes with the amateurs, you know, I have to look beyond just the presentation that's there and kind of understand, maybe ask them questions about what their ball flight is and their experience level, because it's possible it's one of the others.
So in your clinic in Iowa, I'm assuming that your golf season is going to be much more limited than maybe those people out there listening who are maybe in Florida or Texas or California where they're playing year-round. So do you see different injuries maybe in the spring, like in March, April, when guys are just getting out there and starting to hit balls, versus towards the end of the season when players have been playing all summer long and maybe their body's starting to break down towards late summer, early fall?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things I really wish everyone would, you know, if you're in the Midwest area where your golf season is shortened and your winter is quiet, that's really the time to finish a golf season in the late fall and have a maintenance phase and begin an exercise program to start to address a lot of the impairments we've already discussed, to put yourself in the right position and the right physical fitness level to go out and perform 5, 6, 7 months. We'd love to have 8 or 9 of a golf season. And a lot of times you try in the Midwest to get as many rounds in during those months because you know you have a limited season. And so as you start the season, a lot of times, unfortunately, we get that I haven't used it for 3 or 4 months. Now I'm trying to maximize club head speed. I'm trying to maximize, you know, some of the torque on my body, and I just haven't used the muscles for a period of time, and I haven't used the joints, and I haven't done the motion, and we get injuries that way. Where at the end of the golf season, even in our amateurs, you can start to get some overuse where now they've tried to play. Somebody that goes 5 months without playing a round, sometimes 5 months without hitting a golf ball, then they try to play 3 times a week for 5 months, and by the end of it, the body's just broken down, especially if they're not doing some of the maintenance, lifting, cardio, flexibility things, but during the season.
Barton, how about yourself? I'm guessing in the D.C. area, your season's a little bit longer. You may have a little shorter off season than what Nathan's experiencing.
Yeah, in D.C. it's a little bit longer, and it's similar in the sense that people just don't realize that it does take a certain amount of effort, athletic ability, and physical activity in order to complete a golf round. Even if you're, you know, if you're walking, and a lot of times in the early season they don't allow golf carts on the course. If you're walking, it could be as much as a 6 mile walk, depending on the length of the course and so on. And if you're a male or a female, males tend to walk farther because they don't hit it as straight. But 6 miles is a pretty good haul. Pushing a cart or carrying your bag and swinging often and hitting off of hard ground when it's a little bit colder, and you know, all these things affect the body. And I don't think golfers realize that this is an athletic endeavor, and this isn't just okay, I can pick up and do it, any more than a runner that's been waiting to go out and run for a few months. When they get out and start climbing hills and running, they have to ease into it. And then, yeah, by the end of the year, you get all the accumulation of stuff. But the other thing a lot of people forget about are the injuries that the golfer brings to the golf course. So not just the injuries that are caused by golfing, but the other stuff. You know, I slept wrong because I've been traveling over the summer and I slept in a weird bed or got, you know, a kink in my neck, quote unquote, from being on the plane or something like that. And they bring that with them to the golf course, and then that ends up throwing off their mechanics or their swing, which can end up leading to other injuries. And those are important to address as well.
Thank you for joining the Graston Technique Forum. Stay tuned for our second installment regarding injuries to golfers.